Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Alarmy. Before we get started, we wanted to make sure you heard the big news. The Alarmist has joined Patreon. Patreon subscribers will get access to our content ad-free, as well as our Aftermath post-interview discussion and final verdict. We'll also be putting out additional bonus episodes and other fun stuff. Here's a preview of Guest Alarmist, where I step aside and let a guest walk us through a personal tragedy, and together the Alarmist crew figures out who's to blame. This month, Alex Paul discusses the Beverly Hills hotel heist.
The promise of a free vacation.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
I mean, like that.
Nothing in this world is free.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nothing in this world is free. And that's what kind of made us dig deeper, is like, we had no money. We were broke. This seemed like a little fun opportunity, and we could not let it go. Mm-hmm. We wanted it to happen. We couldn't just be like, no, we're not, Peter, we're not on the reservation, goodbye, turn around. We were like, no, like, this is our one little freebie fun thing, like, we should have it.
We want, you know, like,
it's like maximizing, like, on sales, you know, when there's an offer, you can't let it go.
Yes,
you can't let it go.
I know I can't let it go, and apparently Alex also
can't let it go so easily. I love letting offers go. I love when offers come along and I'm just like, nope, not gonna take it.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now on to our episode. Each week we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today we're speaking with guest expert Sam Scott. Sam is a senior writer for Stanford Magazine and has written extensively about the Thanksgiving Day disaster. Let's hear what he has to say. Hi Sam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So we noticed that there has been, or there hasn't been, much coverage throughout the years on the Thanksgiving Day disaster, even though it's one of the deadliest sporting disasters in U.S. history. What drew you to write about it, and why isn't this disaster more well known?
So I'm a writer for Stanford Magazine, and that job entails sometimes reading other people's manuscripts. So a number of years ago now, I was reading a story by someone writing about something that happened at Stanford in the year 1900, and they just happened to reference it as the same year as this disaster where 20 people died plus. And like, I just stopped in my tracks at that moment. I'm like, what? And I'm like, you know, I'm a history buff. I'm a sports buff. I grew up in the Bay Area and I'd never heard anything like this. And so I dropped that manuscript immediately and just Googled things and found out, you know, very quickly the bare bones of the story, you know, 20 plus people dying watching a football game. And as to why that's not well known, I mean, there's probably a layering of reasons, but partly I think life was a lot cheaper in the year 1900 than it is today.
Wow. So can you walk us through the history of the big game? How did it get its start and how popular was it by 1900?
So big game is birthed 9 years before, more or less at the beginning of the birth of Stanford University. They almost immediately have a football team. Berkeley, Cal is slightly older as a university, but they're natural rivals. So I think in 1902, I think in the fall, sorry, the spring is the first mashup of the two. And initially there's two in 1 year. So that kind of takes off the numbers, but by 1900, that is the 10th meeting of these two. And it's popular off the bat. Herbert Hoover, who's later president, is like the team manager. And one of those early years talks about like counting mountains of money from either the first or the second game. You know, it's instantly the biggest event, as they often say, on the Pacific Coast.
Now, the game had had some problems with overcrowding prior to the Thanksgiving Day disaster. What were they? And did they, was there any attempt to fix these issues?
Well, so first of all, the game was held for the first, up until the year 1900, it was held in San Francisco because neither school had a stadium big enough for this event. So it would be in San Francisco, big city, even then, and there were crowd issues. So specifically in 1897, big game, also on Thanksgiving, and you have lots of kids just clambering into the stadium or into the grounds. And specifically, they were climbing up on these roofs that were built for the purpose of like keeping out water and sun. I mean, they were just built for that game. And right as the game's about to end, I think about 2 minutes left, these roofs collapse. All these kids fall down onto the grandstands. There's lots of coverage about bloody heads and people unconscious. And I think only as it ends up, only one kid, 10-year-old, goes to the hospital. But it's a real like foreshadowing of what kind of happens. You know, there's lots of references in the papers that only a sort of a miracle stopped this from being much, much more serious. And, you know, does anything happen? I think some things might have happened, but clearly the lessons weren't fully learned. You know, to get onto what happens in 1900, this does not involve people in the stadium. Whatever did happen that day, nobody was really, people were successfully kept out. It's just the broader implications weren't reckoned with.
Right. How difficult was it to obtain a ticket to this game? How sought after were they?
Well, the articles from, you know, the 1900 big game talk about these were every nook and cranny filled in the entire thing. It's something like 19,000 people, which those papers are given to exaggeration, but I think that's, it seems like it was just truly, truly jammed. The hottest ticket and simply a standing room only ticket would have cost you $1, which sounds like nothing, but if you adjust for inflation, that's probably in the neighborhood of $40. So it's a lot of money just to stand in a standing room only situation, which becomes, you know, doubly relevant here because you've got children who, one, probably don't have that money, and two, if they did, are they going to pay it for a standing room only seat where they're not going to, or a position where they're not going to even see the game very well?
Yeah. Can you give us some backstory on the San Francisco and Pacific Glass Works building? How new was this glass plant and how safely was it built? Did they have any of that in mind?
Yeah, I don't know about OSHA in 1900 or something in terms of, I can't say the factory was new. It's like literally on the north side of the stadium, as you see photos from the day, it's like the next building. It hadn't quite opened yet. It had a huge furnace with thousands of gallons of molten glass in it, but they were bringing it up to temperature for opening, official sort of opening of operations was going to be like the next week. So it hadn't even officially kind of gone into production yet. But you know, for purposes of just getting that furnace to like its desired temperature of something like 15,000 degrees, it had been sort of in pre-operations. As to sort of like, you know, the regulatory oversight of things like that, I don't know anything about that, but I wouldn't imagine it was close.
Yeah. Now, had the glass plant administration run into any issues in before the game about spectators trying to get access to the game? And if so, how did they plan to deal with it?
There's lots of contradictory statements after the fact. There is the treasurer of the Stanford student body said that he'd warned the superintendent of the plant that this was going to a danger, and that he had given him something like 6 tickets in return for sort of a promise to work hard to keep people off the roof. So there was some sense that this could happen, and you've probably was stunningly obvious if you think about it from our perspective.
Yeah. And we read that there had been a watchman that was hired to stop people from climbing up to the roof, but instead sold tickets for access.
There's a few contradictory statements, but there's some statements in the papers that say the watchman or watchmen, I think there's more than one, were offering for 25 cents or the price of a steam, which is a beer. A San Francisco beer. We're letting people on the roof. Then there's denials about that. There's one account of some toughs chasing off one of the watchmen. So I think basically official record ends up being that there was a concerted effort to keep them off the roof, and that they just were unable to sort of stem the tide of people.
I see. How many people ended up gaining access to the roof?
I think it's pretty clearly several hundred. I've seen numbers from like 400 to 200 quoted, but you can tell from photographs of the game that it's, you know, well over 100.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Can you walk us through the events that happened once the game was underway?
Okay, so the game, so this is Thanksgiving Thursday, year 1900. I think the game doesn't start till, is it 2:30 or 3? People start assembling around 10. you know, it's the place to be. And again, kids, people who can't get these tickets start looking for places, and they start descending on the factory. The game kicks off. We're about 20 minutes into the action when this roof just collapses. And I should say that everybody had gathered on what's called a ventilator. So if you look at it, the pitch roof of a factory has a little pop top where the heat can escape. And that's the highest point, like a natural place for everybody to assemble, but it's probably also the, I guess, the weakest part of the roof. It's just a uprising for heat to escape. And so they're all lined up there. About 20 minutes into the game, it just collapses like a, you know, sort of opens up. The crowd disappears. But the game's going on and barely anybody notices, because they're you know, they're in the game. They can see there's a sense, I guess, that something's happened, but you know, within the stadium with no means of communication, the game just continues.
What happens once the roof gives? I read accounts of 100 people fell into the plant, and some even fell onto the furnace. What was the fate of those who fell?
Not a good fate.
No.
Not a good fate. So I think this factory is about three stories high, 45, 50 feet high.
Wow.
So they're falling just from that perch onto cement below. If they're lucky, and the really unlucky ones fell onto the bricks of the furnace itself, which was, you know, surface temperature about 500 degrees. And then many of them, the way it worked out, other people would fall on top of them. So you've got a combination of horrible burns. You've got falling from death, you know, death from height. It's not a good kind of result, obviously.
And there were actual workers who were in the building at the time who were helping some of these victims. Is that right?
There's like a skeleton crew working the factory that day. And there's two guys specifically who are, you know, one almost get killed themselves by bodies falling on top of them. And then two, you know, they're the ones who are using poles and whatever they can to get bodies off of the furnace, or to get, you know, people off the furnace.
What was the authorities' response to the emergency? How quickly were the victims tended to?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of debate was at the time was about how quickly they responded to the building emergency. Like the factory supervisor had said he had called police for help, and there was a lot of contention about whether they came promptly or not, or whether he just got sort of the runaround in terms of police coming. But I think once it fell through, it sounds like, you know, it was sort of all hands on deck to respond to it with you know, firemen, firefighters, police coming. The dead were, and the wounded were taken on, you know, any basically cart or hack or horse-drawn carriage was taken and used to take people to hospitals and morgues, sometimes carried on pieces of roof or whatever makeshift stretcher there was available.
And did the game ever stop while this was all happening?
No, the game never stopped, the game continued. And one of the great bizarre aspects of this, if you look at it with modern eyes, is that they almost just completely happened in parallel worlds.
Wow.
So the game never stopped. The game continued. The people celebrated afterwards. And that's somewhat explainable by modern standards, because, you know, they only knew so much. There was no cell phones, obviously. But that divide continues afterwards, where you have sports celebrations about the greatest football game that year, and there's just no mention at all of this thing that happens next door. It's as if it's not even part of the same event, which, you know, by modern standards, we just wouldn't think that way at all.
Did the city in any way, I mean, were there articles written about it? Were people discussing what had happened?
So this is front page news nationally. This is on the front page of the New York Times the next day.
Oh, wow.
It's on the front page, of course, of all the local papers who are covering it in lurid detail. So there's a great deal of attention for one day. And then it disappears from the national press after one day, as far as I can tell. And then even in San Francisco, it's only about a week later that it just is never or hardly ever mentioned again. The official inquest, I think, is on December 6th or 7th. So that's about a week afterwards. And that after that, there's very little follow up at all.
Was there anyone ever brought to trial for this tragedy, or did the families of the victims ever receive any compensation?
No, maybe this gets to my earlier point about life being cheaper. There's an inquest. I think it's a civil inquest, so it was never going to be criminal, if I got that right. And basically at the end of it, they place all blame on the victims who never should have been on the roof. There had no one to blame but themselves is essentially, you know, what it said. And that's sort of shocking on its face when you have 23 dead, but it's also shocking when you consider that most of the victims were very young. I mean, the youngest victim was 9. The average age was probably about 13 or 14. So we're not talking about, like, you know, full adults who you might think, hey, you got to really reckon with the risks here. These were kids just responding to events.
Now, were there any public safety changes that came about after this tragedy? And in your opinion, how important is it that we continue to remember what happened?
As far as I can tell, almost nothing happens as a result of this, which is sort of the tragedy,
Wow. Plainly
what makes it interesting. There is a reference in one of the articles to Chicago considering a ban on rooftop spectators as a result, which is sort of ironic because in modern ways, I think of Wrigley Field and rooftop spectators. That's the only place I really think of them in Chicago. And there's very little I could find to say that anybody changed anything. It doesn't happen again. So on some level, you feel like some lesson was learned, right? There was that thing in 1897 when the grandstands collapsed. And then in 1900s, there's this awful thing that happens. There is no third part of that, like, trend, as far as I know. So some lesson seems to have been, like, absorbed. But whether that was through some sort of rule or law, I kind of doubt it. It didn't seem to be what was happening.
So we always ask our guest experts this question. Finally, at the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or thing, it could be a concept that you think is to blame for the Thanksgiving Day disaster, who or what would that be?
I guess I would have to come back to just almost a very boring answer, but it's sort of a cultural value of the day that, like I said in the beginning, that life was cheap. You know, there are articles written the next day, sports articles, that talk about the heartbreaking tension of the game, right? Not the heartbreaking disaster next door. They're using these metaphors for the actual game themselves. Or say things like when the smoke cleared, referring to the battle of the game. You know, again, not that bodies themselves haven't burned next door. So there's just sort of like this inbuilt oblivion to what, you know, from our standards today, it seems so obvious that this is a tragedy. This tragedy is part of the game. And they're all tied up, and maybe you should address them as one. And as another example, there's articles like, you know, a week later about how this was the most profitable big game for the two sides yet. Like each side netted something like $300,000 in modern terms, which, you know, like a good clear. And the articles don't say things like, and maybe we should have a little fundraiser, or some of that should go towards these families who are now bereft, who've lost lots of things, who have largely, I think, were pretty working class, and it's not like they had a lot of resources. So it's just not even there.
Wow.
If you read like the Stanford student newspaper and the Berkeley student newspaper from the next edition, about, they have their full front pages are about the football game. There's not even a mention of death. You know, yearbooks months later talk about like the glory of this day. So it's really, there's something a lot deeper that really at play here that I think goes beyond, like, you know, naming, for example, the superintendent of the glassworks as being at fault. There's just a cultural ethos where, I don't know, like, life is cheaper and people have a very narrow sense of, I guess, causality and their implication in things that happen near them.
Yeah. Well, Sam, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us remember this terrible tragedy that we should continue to remember.
Or start.
At least, exactly. At the very least. Thanks so much, Sam. If you'd like to hear our post-interview discussion and final verdict, head over to Patreon and subscribe. Your support is greatly appreciated. Check out our show notes for a link or head over to patreon.com/thealarmist. From The Alarmist, we wish all of the alarmy a happy Thanksgiving. And stay tuned because next week we'll be discussing The Boy Living in the Walls. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.